While the slides are loading, I just want to thank you for the opportunity to have a discussion on the reduction of childhood vaccination disparities. This is a new example. This is the first time we've been looking at this story from this perspective. We hope that this case study will also be published in the Annals of Epidemiology and perhaps also be used as a training example. I also want to tell a little bit about my story as it relates to policy, since we're disclosing our policy experience. While at CDC for 26 years, after the first 15 years, I think, Jose, with the help of Jose and others as mentors, I did go to the University of North Carolina to complete a Doctor of Public Health with the purpose of trying to translate epidemiology evidence more effectively into policy. Although in the public sector, in public health agencies, if you will, we have a little bit more of that opportunity, which I'll emphasize in a minute. But even in that environment, as a practicing epidemiologist, I thought that I needed to do more. And so I did go away for 6 months at a time, over 2 years, to do the DRPH. Okay. First I'll say that I don't have any personal or financial relationships with commercial interest, and that the findings and conclusions in this presentation are those of mine and do not necessarily represent the views of CDC where I work. Okay. As Dr. Cordero mentioned, I'm in the Office of Minority Health and Health Equity after spending two decades in the immunization program at CDC. And it seemed fitting that I work on these issues because of this particular case study. And as you know, the health disparities experienced by communities of color are disproportionate, and that what this case study does is illustrate how we can improve the health of everybody. It can inform that process. So as we go through this, I'd like you to think about that also in that context. And I'm presenting this as a epidemiologist practicing at a federal public health agency. And I don't speak for, all my colleagues in the federal government working in public health agencies, nor do I even speak for colleagues at the state and local level. And there are some of those colleagues in this audience today that might want to weigh in on these issues as well. So this example is the impact of national childhood immunization strategies in improving the vaccination status of all children. And I wanted to give you some historical perspective on this. This didn't happen overnight, as you all know. The childhood immunization efforts span 50 years. In 1962, for the first time, this nation had a vaccine assistance program. And in 1963, the first federal grants to states were provided to actually purchase the vaccine, and also these states across the United, our country, were given personnel, including epidemiologists, to coordinate and to implement these vaccination programs at the state level primarily. And these grants to states for vaccines and people were to really improve our ability to deliver the polio vaccine and other childhood vaccines at the time. And it was a safety net kind of program that didn't want to leave any child behind. They wanted everyone to benefit from the vaccines that were newly licensed. And many of you in this audience may remember receiving these vaccines during school campaigns, mass campaigns, where a lot of us got the polio vaccine and sugar cubes. And then other children might have gotten the vaccine, these newly licensed vaccines, in their communities. And you could see this community here. This slide shows the actual impact of those efforts during the 60s and the 70s and even the 80s. So let's focus on this, the time period within this box right here. So the impact of these vaccination grant programs and efforts really showed, and this figure focuses on children younger than school age. These are children under 5 years of age. And many of you remember that with the school age children, with the mass campaigns and all, and then there were subsequent initiatives in the 1970s to improve vaccination among school age children through requirements, state-based requirements that were enforced during the 70s. And so for school-age children, vaccination coverage improved rapidly, and then the disparities were eliminated. So by the 80s, more than 95% of children of school age were vaccinated against a number of vaccine-preventable diseases. However, the preschool problem began to emerge. And as you can see in the 1970s here, when you compare white children in the red line to non-white children or minority children, what you find is a 20 percentage point gap. Coverage was between 60 and 80% for these newly licensed vaccines. However, there was a gap for children younger than school age, okay? But that changed. It changed because of a measles resurgence, and it's really shown here, that began in 1989. So you see this little blip here. This is the number of cases of measles over time from 1950 to 2010, and there was a blip here in measles occurrence in the United States. Well, for some people, that was major outrage that preschool children, young children, were dying in urban areas because of a vaccine-preventable disease. So this really changed things. We actually, at the federal level, are tied to a lot of opportunities to influence policymakers, if you will. They look to us to provide the scientific information. For example, since the 1960s, there has been an advisory committee on immunization practices, and the immunization program at CDC has been working with them throughout that time. So we are linked to policy makers that way. And so we have quite a bit of opportunity. We also work in multidisciplinary teams. So when I mentioned that the grant program provided personnel to states to implement these immunization programs, it included epidemiologists, but it also included what we call public health advisors who help manage the program, engage communities, and so on. But at any rate, this is another body that we were able to work with. It's the National Vaccine Advisory Committee. And the scientific epidemiologic data showed and documented clearly the problems and the barriers that preschool children were having in accessing immunization services. So what came out of all the scientific data and our working with policymakers was a dual immunization strategy, one in which there were key universal interventions to reach most children, and then there were targeted interventions to reach the most vulnerable. Some of the key universal interventions included the two-dose measles vaccination. There was the presidential priority, increased funding. There were actual plans that were fully funded. You know, I haven't discussed the funding piece where epidemiologists have the opportunity to tell compelling stories around the funding needs. And that's one of the responsibilities of a epidemiologist who's a leader or a director of this national immunization program. So they had the opportunity to show the fluctuations in funding during the 70s impacted the incidence of these vaccine-preventable diseases. And they also had the opportunity to show that the measles resurgence actually was a part of that. So in 1991, the immunization action plans were partially funded under one administration and then fully funded under another. So there were evidence-based immunization action plans at the state level and in our large urban centers to set this is what we needed to improve immunization levels. Then there was an improvement of the quality of the immunization services delivered in clinics and doctor's offices through new standards for practice. Quality improvement techniques occurred. Basic descriptive vaccination assessments at the national, state, and local levels, as well as in clinics and doctor's offices. There were coalitions and partnerships, operational research about what works, and a lot of information campaigns. So these were universal interventions, but there were targeted interventions as well. One of the major targeted interventions was focused on those children who were dying in urban areas, who were unvaccinated, and they happened to be low-income and minority children. So the Vaccines for Children's program provided vaccine to uninsured and underinsured children. There was extra funding for the basic immunization 317 grant program for urban areas, and also there was annual assessment of vaccination coverage in high-risk areas for measles, local urban action plans, and partnerships with programs and organizations that could reach these most vulnerable populations, and special information campaigns. This slide shows the impact of that dual immunization strategy. And what it shows is that during the downslope of the measles epidemic of 1989 through 1991, the measles incidence decreased. And it decreased not only for white children, but for all of the children. And it also impacted adolescents and adults in the population, so that by 1993, the incidence of measles by race and ethnicity was essentially the same. And it was close to zero. We now have a lot of imported cases, and we have roughly 100 cases a year, and we won't see measles disappear from the United States until there's global eradication. At any rate, this also shows the impact of that dual immunization strategy. What it shows that after the measles epidemic and the implementation of the dual strategy, what you see is a closing of the vaccination coverage gap and essential elimination of any disparities in vaccination coverage among the preschool-age children. We also see the reduction and the sort of closing of the gap by race and ethnicity for the vaccination coverage regarding the vaccination series. Now, we are introducing new vaccines all the time, and that's being added to the childhood schedule. So this is a really complex process, but you're seeing that there was a significant reduction and that the coverage by race and ethnicity among preschool children 19 to 35 months of age is very, very close. And depending on what vaccine you're looking at, there's elimination as well of the disparity. And what is really telling is that within 1 year of the flu vaccination recommendation for everyone, you know, children as young as 6 months of age, what we find is that you don't have any disparities anymore. You have a similar or higher vaccination coverage of children 6 months to 17 years of age. Okay, so in conclusion, what have we learned? We've learned that this is effective policy and practice because of the evidence-based national goals, interventions, and that dual strategy. There was close and routine monitoring and evaluation of this progress, and the immunization efforts were held accountable. We also had action plans with realistic budgets and incentives for performance. There was funding across administrations, as I mentioned, those immunization action plans, state plans, and local plans, and partnerships at the national, state, and local levels. Lots of communication campaigns. Now, in terms of training, I was really excited when I had an opportunity to weigh in, but I want to make sure that my state and local public health agency colleagues also have an opportunity. These are the kinds of epidemiologic methods, if you will, that we should focus on if we're going to be more effective in this process. As a member of a team, and some epidemiologists have an opportunity to lead and direct as well. But at any rate, when we think about epidemiologists in the 21st century, these are some of the needs: being trained in health services research, operational research, program evaluation, economic analyses, and of course, health equity, which is cross-cutting. And we're going to hear more about that from Dr. Carter Poukris. So at this point, I'd like to stop. Well, not quite stop. I wanted to remind you about what we do at CDC. We save lives, we protect people, and save money through prevention. This is our website, and if you want to go to the Office of Minority Health and Health Equity Work website, you just put a slash after gov and type in O-M-H-H-E, or go to the main CDC website, website and type in minority health or health equity or health disparities. For the medical students in the audience, I just wanted to put a plug in for the elective that we have for medical students, and we also have opportunities for residents and practicing physicians at the CDC through the EIS program and working within the United States Public Health Service. So I'd like to thank you for your attention, and any questions I'll be pleased to answer. Perhaps Dr. Perry-Ann would like to talk about some of what she learned at the state level working on the immunization issues.
Yes.